everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
That's right. And today we have some, what would you call it, dark reality.
Yeah.
You know, we like, we're really pleasant people most of the time. We're happy.
Yeah.
But every now and then we got to read some Flannery O'Connor and a dash of Calvary.
And, watch a McDonagh Brothers movie, evidently.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, we did a movie in Bruges.
Yes.
I can't remember what episode number that is, but I'll put it in the show notes. And this time we're going to talk about a movie called Calvary, which is written and directed by the brother of the guy who directed In Bruges. The director of Calvary is John Michael McDonagh.
Yes.
Did I say his last name correctly?
You did.
Fantastic. That is good. And what a movie this is. Starring Brendan Gleeson, mm-hmm. who I just cannot get enough of.
I
love his stuff so far. He was absolutely magnificent in Bruges. And here he plays a priest in Ireland. And I think he hit this one out of the park. Very thoughtful, very serious priest.
Yeah, and this is his second movie with John Michael McDonagh. The first movie that they made together, and it was John Michael McDonagh's first movie, is called The Guard. Hmm. And it's about a corrupt and cynical policeman in a tiny Irish town. And it's much more in the vein of In Bruges in terms of being a lot of cynical, sharp humor, but with an interesting heart to it. And in this, I remember watching the Q&A on the DVD for The Guard, which I watched because I had a chance to go to a screening where the director was there and then actually to talk to him in an interview.
Exciting.
And so I was super nervous and I was watching that to kind of get a feel for things. And at that point, John Michael McDonagh said his next movie was also going to have Brendan Gleeson, because he thought with the news coming out of Ireland, there would be a lot of movies about bad priests. And he was interested in what happened to the good priest who was left kind of behind in the landscape in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did not expect that this movie would be as powerful as it is and as true to the heart of Catholicism, I think, as it is.
And it is. I watched this thing 3 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it really hit me. It's a 5-star movie.
Hats
in
off.
My opinion.
3 times.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah. I watched it, a month ago or something? I think I told you, hey, I finally saw this and I thought it was terrific. But yeah, there's so much there. And again, Brendan Gleeson is just fantastic. Just watching him go through this movie is, I think the last time, the third time I watched it, I was just watching him kind of travel through this movie. From the opening scene, which sets the tone for the rest of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So should we get into what it's about?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So, and I guess I should say we chose this not just because it was a dark movie, but because this is every quarter we'll do a religious themed book or movie.
Yeah,
so this was my movie choice.
Right. And this is a movie... I don't know. I'd give this movie to anybody. It's not like, I think, most of the religious movies we've seen, I would give to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure why I said that. I guess I'm just saying I don't see this as, a quote unquote religious movie, although it very much is. It's something that I'd give to anybody,
right.
No matter what. They just, it's very enjoyable.
Well, and it wasn't marketed as a religious movie. The fact that a couple of religious people were in an interview with the director was kind of an afterthought, actually. It was the press who was interested in this, and it was released as a small independent movie.
Mm-hmm.
Although, of course, with the subject matter, religious people are going to look at it. But because it's dark and deals with some subjects that people don't like to think about when they think about religious movies, if your idea is Bing Crosby, you're going to have an adjustment.
Yeah, and it is definitely rated R. In theme, I would say.
Yeah, so it starts off and we see the priest in the confessional, Father James, I believe is his name, and one of his parishioners who's behind the screen or behind the, you know, the little door that they flip up. They can't see you, but they can just hear you. Says he was brutalized by a priest when he was young, repeatedly, and the priest is now dead, and he doesn't see any point in taking it to the church as an institution. And so the only way to get attention for this is to basically treat an innocent person the way he was treated. And so he's giving this priest a week to get his affairs in order, and then he's going to kill him.
Yeah, I'll meet you down on the beach on Sunday week.
Yeah. And so what we see is the priest going through his week. You know, every so often you'll see it'll say Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah. It's getting up or starting his day.
There was one line there that I just can't get out of my head. And it's when the confessor, the person confessing, mm-hmm. is finished talking. And he says, "Don't you have anything to say?" And he said, "Well, I don't right now, but I will on Sunday week." Mm-hmm. "I'm sure I'll think of something come Sunday week," I think is what he said. But I, you know, for some reason that line just sticks in my head. Because that's the movie right there. It's, you know, his week before Sunday.
Well, before the next and Sunday. What's interesting is then you see him with his bishop. He's gone into the next big town, Dublin or wherever. I don't know where it is. It can't be Dublin because he was going to have to take a plane later if he wanted to go there.
Yeah.
But and he's talking to his bishop, who says, "Do you know who it is?" And he says, "Well, yes, I do." Because, of course, it's a very small town. He would know the voice of the person. He says, "Well, mm-hmm. He wasn't confessing. He doesn't have any repentance. It's not the seal of the confessional doesn't apply. Just tell the police." And he says, "Well, I don't think he's really going to do it. I don't know if that's the right way to handle things."
And that is why I had to watch it the second time. Because when I watch it the first time and you find out how it all resolves,
mm-hmm.
then you got to watch it again to find out if what the clues were, you know, if, you know, and it's even more amazing the second time because of that. Because you're like, okay, this person, the priest knows the whole time and yet goes about his week the way he did.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was truly amazing. And mm-hmm. what I forgot to say is when this movie opens, it starts with a quote from St. Augustine. "Do not despair. One of the thieves was saved. Do not presume. One of the thieves was damned," meaning the two thieves on the cross on either side of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at this movie, you're supposed to always have that in context. And that's an interesting context to have.
It is. Yeah.
We've got Christ in the midst of us all the time. Are we accepting him or denying him?
Yeah, and I love that quote, you know, "Do not presume." I think that we go down that road of presumption. It's not mm-hmm. for us. It's just not right. for us. And when people start pointing at you and saying you're going this way or that way, I think it's time to stop listening. You know, because you can't presume. So I really love that.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and so as he goes through the week, he runs into various townspeople who we learn very quickly what their flaws are. Some of them are angry. Some of them are more passive about it. I guess most of them are angry. In fact, there's only one person who doesn't seem to be angry with him, and that's an old writer. And even he's pretty crusty.
Yeah.
But everybody else, whether in a passive or aggressive way, is taking out everything they hate about the Catholic Church on this priest. And the interesting thing to me at the time of watching it, because I knew it was written not as a Catholic meditation necessarily, it was just looking at this priest in this situation and knowing that the writer director was Irish, very Irish, and the Irish have had a lot of scandals about the Catholic Church, especially lately. Mm-hmm. I was kind of looking for, you know, the whiffs of attacking the church through this. And I never really got that feeling because the priest never denies that bad people we're doing things in the name of the church, but he also doesn't change the fact that he is there trying to love them as Christ would in his ministry. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to talk to the person who he thinks gave somebody a black eye. He's, you know, they're flicking cigarettes at him or saying things about the missions in Africa. And he's not denying that, you know, people mishandled a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a heartbreaking scene, where he was walking down the road with a girl.
Yeah.
I bet you that exact thing happens. Mm-hmm. He was just walking down the road. He just happened to be walking the same direction as a young girl. And so they ended up, you know, walking together and talking. And at the end of the road, this girl's father drives up and just freaks out. He's like, you know, a priest is talking to my girl and, you know, mm-hmm. what are you saying to her? And horrible.
Yeah, and it's one of the few times when you see the priest flabbergasted.
Yeah, yeah.
He's stunned.
Well, I've seen Christopher Hitchens say that, you know, he would never leave anyone alone with a priest. And it just breaks my heart.
As I was watching it, though, well, that's true, because mm-hmm. you should be able to.
Right.
And we're all held to this higher standard once we've said we're Christian, we're Catholic, you know, you take holy orders. But we're also still people, and we should cooperate with the extra grace that's given us when we're baptized, when we're confirmed, when we have Holy Communion. But how often do we listen to those lesser voices, the temptations and the other things? And that's why Brendan Gleeson's performance is so powerful, because he's not a holier-than-thou person at all. He's very down to earth, but yet he's clearly radiating this goodness and integrity.
Yeah, you know, he is, and he's not
he's
perfect.
Really fully himself.
Yeah. And he's not perfect.
No.
Yeah, I mean, during these conversations, he doesn't try to pretend either, which Mm-mm. is what you just said, but it which is great. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think someone called him judgmental. You're judgmental, Father. And he says, yes, I am. But I try not to be.
Yeah, but I try not to be.
Yeah, which is exactly what we do, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
So.
And it's the knowing thyself. And so as I was watching this the first time, and I've seen it only twice, I watched it this weekend again, and it was interesting to see. Oh, I meant to ask you, did you know who did it, who the person in the confessional was?
I got to tell you, I did, but not for any story type reasons. I mean, I ended up being right, but the reason that I was right the first time I saw it was because, I don't know, if I say why I felt like I knew, I think I'm giving it away.
Okay, well, we could talk about that later.
Yeah, well, let's go past the line, and then once we're...
Because I also felt like I knew, and then but what the power of the script was, that I kept getting pulled away into other suspicions.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like it was successful in that fashion.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. In fact, it's actually enhanced. The second viewing, I liked it even more, because mm-hmm. I was like, okay, now I know who it was, and wow.
Yeah.
The fact that he would do this stuff that he did was amazing.
Right, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's hard to imagine that priests run into situations like this, but I know that I wound up doing the interview with a Methodist minister who also is really into movies, and he said he remembered going into a church which had been deeply betrayed by the previous pastor, and his situation for quite some time was almost exactly like that. Everybody was so angry, and he was the person there that they could take it out on, because he was pretty safe. He had to be nice to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said something like this to the director said that I think this was at the bar after the official interview thing, but the priest said that the director said that he and Brendan Gleeson had done some kind of Q&A thing where a priest came up to them and said, I've had weeks just like this. And I thought, this is nightmarish. Those poor men, I am not praying for them nearly enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they need extra grace because they're the obvious target.
Yeah.
Just as much as a cop in a bad neighborhood, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. So yeah, not only are they the target, but even if you remove that hostility, it's still mm-hmm. rough. I mean, they're seeing the darkest mm-hmm. side of everybody, and everybody keeps mm-hmm. bringing it to them.
Yeah.
And saying, help me. Or sometimes giving it to them and saying, you can't help me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, why did you bring it to me then?
Yeah. But I'm that, you
know,
help me.
Right. Yeah. And, but that's their life, you know?
Well, and I've seen this criticized in terms of, saying that the characters in it are all too pointed, too, I don't want to say twisted, but too extreme, I guess, and too quirky. And about halfway through, at the point where the daughter is reading an H.P. Lovecraft book, which for me was a focal point, obviously, since I love weird fiction, but I suddenly made this mental shift where I suddenly said, this is actually a morality play. I mean, you could take it as, you know, explaining real life, but you can also just take it as here we are with the personification of anger, lust, greed, homosexuality, all these various things that you're making points about where the church says it's one way and the world says it's a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Says these things are okay to indulge in.
Yeah.
To your detriment. And so because these people have lost their faith, essentially, they're coming to this person to bounce off of and show the contrast. If you look at it just that way, it's not a pure morality play, but for me, that kind of negated that criticism of the other characters being too extreme, because Brendan Gleeson is so very real.
Yeah. 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 That's a good point. But yeah, it can certainly be looked at that way. Yeah. And yet, you know, kind of like in the movie where, you know, at some point he says, you know, we talk so much about sin. We don't talk enough about virtue. And there was one person that he was able to help during that week.
Yeah.
It was almost like, okay, amongst all of these negatives, here's a positive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's much like what he said there. You know, we talk so much about sin. We talk so much about the negative thing, but we don't talk enough about virtue. And I think that's a very, very good statement, something that I should take to heart, too.
Yeah, that's because that's the positive warrior-like aspect,
mm-hmm.
where we're getting a little aggressive with it, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess there's not a lot else to say. I mean, he's got a daughter, and that's because she's a grown daughter, and that's because he was married, and when his wife died, he went into the priesthood. They have various issues, and she's, we see from the very beginning, tried to commit suicide. So they're also talking about that. She's come for a visit during that week. She doesn't know anything about this threat to her father. And it's really, especially the second time through, when you know the story, I loved the times that she was flaring up in defense of her father.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, she was the person who loves him no matter what.
Right.
And that was really great. And then, as you say, we see him doing various things. Sometimes he's visiting parishioners who have various needs, but he also was at the hospital because somebody's husband had died. And so he's talking to that person. He's talking to the local atheist doctor. He's at the pub. There's a dance. All these various just little things. And because we know what we know, it's all in very sharp focus. And then at the end of the week, he goes down to the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does.
And then we see what happens.
Then we see who it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shows up. Right.
And how that's resolved.
Yeah. So if you don't want that spoiled... really like to talk about that aspect of it too. So,
yeah.
I think we can move, let's move on into spoiler territory, but, if you want to watch this movie unspoiled, please do.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
It's very rewarding. Don't let the fact that we're saying it's dark stop you, because I think the filmmaker did such a brilliant job of the thing that classic literature can do, which is he's showing you all this and it is dark and serious, but there are touches of humor deliberately put throughout it that lighten it up some. It's not, as mm-hmm. it's been described, a dark comedy. It's not. But it's lightened up by touches of comedy. And it's also you feel detached enough, I guess maybe because of the quirkiness of the characters. You still feel for the priest and everything, but from the characters and their problems, you don't feel immediately wrenched by them, or at least I didn't. So in that way, I feel like it's a safe dark movie, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure. I would agree with that.
Okay.
That's a good, very good.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're on the other side of that.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say earlier is it was just because of who the actor was.
Right.
That's the only reason that I, it was like, oh, he probably did it because why is he in this movie? You know what I mean?
If you've watched The IT Crowd.
Yeah. Right.
And what an Chris, actor
Chris
he
O'Dowd.
Is.
He's really good.
Chris O'Dowd.
He's really good.
He's very good.
Yeah, he has a show that is floating around on, let's see, I've got to remember what the name of that is, but he plays like an imaginary friend to a boy. Let's see, Moon Boy. That's the name of the TV series.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, MOONE Boy.
Oh, okay.
And I think there's 12 episodes total, but it's like on Hulu or whatever, but it's an interesting little show.
Okay.
Yeah, he's talking, it's like an older version of himself or something, but he's like this little boy's imaginary friend.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so he's a very interesting guy. I keep watching stuff with him in it.
Well, and he really has a good sense of, he's able to bring off that desperation even when he's talking to the priest. You don't know it's him, but he's making all these jokes about sodomy and various things like that.
Yeah,
but there's this sense of desperation underneath his laughter.
Yeah, there is.
And pointed anger.
Yeah, so on the second watch, when the priest shows up because his wife has a black eye.
Yeah.
So the priest visited the wife first, and then he goes to visit this guy. And now you know that the priest knows that he's the one who said, I'm going to kill you. And he shows up and says, hey, I need to talk to you for a minute. And now you're thinking, or I was thinking, what this guy is thinking. This guy is thinking, oh my gosh, I'm about to be confronted by this priest who I just threatened to kill. And you can see in the scene that there was a moment at which he realized what they were going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that. It was his wife. And he changed.
Think about that.
He changed his demeanor.
You're so clever.
Well, it was fantastic. They were the clever ones. I was just happened to, because the second watch, I was like, well, this is amazing that the priest is going to visit this guy and he doesn't even mention it. Because I thought that was amazing. That's why I was watching it, but it was really well played.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because he's nervously making the jokes about, oh, we're shut in here together,
Yeah, exactly.
Well, exactly. And also during the fire when the church is burned down and he's standing there just, the look on his face is he's almost leaning into the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was brilliant in so many ways because that's when I was watching and I was like, it just has to be him.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, the second time I was watching it, I was like, well, isn't this an interesting analogy for the church itself? It's in flames. Can it be saved?
Yeah. And there was one thing
destroyed
right there that sticks in my head, too. These just one lines that this just sear right through everything into my head.
Mm-hmm.
And one was, any fool can start a fire.
And
that carries with it such depth because it's true. Anybody can destroy and throw mud and any, that.
Mm-hmm.
And in our society today, just get on the news channels and say something horrible and, the people in the world are going to believe it and it's never going to go away. But it's so easy to start a fire.
Well, and that kind of makes it interesting because I was thinking about you say that and the reason to me that everybody keeps coming back to Brendan Gleeson's character, Father James, is because they're trying to see can they make him lose his integrity. They have lost their integrity. They have some loathing for themselves, something that they've done that they can't forgive themselves for, essentially. Although they act like they're glorying in it, but they keep coming back to him, back to him, back to him. And he just keeps being true to himself and to his calling as a priest. And it makes me think, I remember just like a couple days ago, I don't watch the news, but there was this news bite about Pope Francis said people should spank their children. And then they had all these people who were, you know, reacting to that. Oh, no, that's promoting violence in the family. And all the what, how, you know, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, people, take it in context. And also, sometimes kids need to be spanked. I'm going to say it. You know, my kid walked out into the street so many times when she was a toddler. I finally had to give her two good whacks on the bottom, and she never did it again.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor standing there gave me this look. And I was like, so I should just let her do this? You know?
Yeah, so I should let her walk out there?
Yeah. When a car's coming by, she could just walk because I didn't want to spank her a couple times.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, I didn't do it much. But the thing is that it's that same thing. They keep picking these things out and then throwing stuff, setting fires.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if we're talking about Pope Francis, you know, I feel like I fell off the planet for a week, so I missed that one. I've got to catch up.
Yeah.
But it's been something after thing after thing after thing,
mm-hmm,
about Pope Francis. And you look at, you know, it's just flabbergasting that, you know, so much of the time you go back to what he actually said and you're saying, well, what he said was perfectly, that was right. You know, mm-hmm, he so I wouldn't be surprised to go back and read whatever, and it would have been reasonable what he said.
And also it occurs to me, I know that anybody in the public eye gets this, but it seems to me, maybe I'm wrong, I feel like it's more for Pope Francis than for Pope Benedict or John Paul.
And I think, you know, Pope Benedict was really reserved. He wasn't addressing a lot of the issues publicly.
Right.
That, you know, and Pope Francis is just like, yeah, I'll talk about that. I mean, he's just out there like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the difference.
Come on up and talk to me.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I was wondering if it's because he's so admired, because I'll say something and I'll be joking, you know, mm-hmm, and people go, oh, no, he's great, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I'm not saying he's not great. I was just making a joke. I'm Catholic. I could do that, by the way. But it's non-Catholics who are rushing to his defense. And I find that interesting, because that's not necessarily what you would find with such personal feeling. And I think that's the quality that we're seeing in Father James here. And in fact, one of the things that I loved, when it kind of goes along with the any fool can set a fire, mm-hmm, at the same time, somebody says, oh, so something about your church. And he goes, it's not my church. It's our church. I think it's right before then in the bar, maybe somebody's saying something to him.
Yeah, it's actually, it's after that. He said,
is it after that?
Yeah, so you're going to rebuild your church or something, they asked him. And he said, that wasn't my church. It's ours.
Our church.
Yeah.
And that's the thing of, we all have to take responsibility,
mm-hmm,
for what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just up to the priest. We're not just here to freeload off of them, essentially.
Right.
All the times that people didn't speak up and stop something early enough. I mean, I'm not saying that bad priests and the church aren't culpable for their own actions, but it's also the people who, say, during the sex scandal, wouldn't listen to their kids, or, you know, all those kind of things, is we have to remember they're not Jesus.
Hmm. Definitely not. Definitely not. What did you think of his partner priest? That was
a very interesting man.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. He was like, really didn't want to offend anybody.
He was the modern version of a priest.
That's exactly how I took it. It was like, what was it about? Okay, this lady was having an affair with a black man.
Yeah.
And,
oh, right. And he was going to say something.
She was an Irish woman having an affair. Exactly. And that priest is worried about offending the minorities. Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, what are you talking about? But I just thought that was interesting.
Well, because that was a direct contrast. And the first notice you get, and again, when I was watching it the first time through, I was a bit prickly. I was waiting for things that weren't right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, I just didn't really see them, other than the fact when they'd say something like, well, a week Sunday, I'll meet you on the beach. And I'm like, they don't do confessions on Sunday. But that's a small point. You know, I'll let that go. But when the one they're reading the paper and having coffee or tea or whatever in the morning, and the other priest is saying, oh, well, not to give any details about the confessional, but, and then he says something and I'm like, OMG. And Brendan Gleeson says, oh, you call that not giving any details, not violating the sanctity of the confessional. That's, and I'm like, thank you. Thank you very much. Because he can't wait to gossip.
He can't wait. Yeah, he can't wait. This is so hard for me. They're telling me all these things. Can you believe that that's, you know, yeah, this is, and you not giving me any details, is it?
Yeah.
Which is complete contrast to him spending his week not telling anybody what anything. This guy said. Yeah.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was really so perfectly written and played. And that was the thing where I looked at that and said, you know, the contrast between the two priests is one is genuine and the other is not. It's, you'd think some people would write it as the savvy priest who knows what's going on and the naive young priest. But this is somebody who just, as Brendan Gleeson says, he go, because finally the priest is leaving. He's going to, the other priest, he's going to rethink his vocation. And he says, you know, I can't believe you hate me. And he says, well, it's not that I hate you. It's just that you have no integrity. That's the worst thing I could say about anybody. And I was like, oh, that was the huge core of the movie for me. And I have to say, I mentioned that to the director, writer, director. Mm-hmm. And I said, this was so key. And I was going on to say something else. And he goes, well, just a minute. I just want to mention that that's so important. It was before I even started writing the screenplay. That was a conversational moment I already had.
That was that's
the
really
point
cool.
of the good priest, I think.
I love that. I love that. So it's interesting then that so that relationship between those two priests was kind of a key thing while he was writing it, huh?
I assume so, because that's the core of the movie. That's when you realize that Brendan Gleeson's got integrity. That's what makes him genuine, and they're continually bouncing off of it. I mean, think of that rich man.
Yeah.
And he's the one who we see really respond.
Yeah, he changes at the end. He's like, you know, I'm having a really tough time here. You know, after and you got to love that, you know, Brendan Gleeson's Father James. You know, he goes there, he says, this person needs help, you know, and he knows it. But he's not going to take any crap from this guy. He's not going to sit there and say, you know, you're right. We just need to feel better about all this. Instead, he says, you know, you invited me here to make fun of me and I'm leaving.
Yeah.
He says, you know, when you're ready, you'd let me know and I'm going to be here for you. But right now I'm out of here.
Yeah, he calls him on it.
Right. Right.
And that's something that people seem to be afraid to do these days.
Yeah, that's it. I agree.
Which is the contrast with the other priest. He's so namby-pamby. And so what you see is that what people need is someone who's genuine. Because the bishop is just as bad in his own way. Brendan Gleeson's Father James goes to see him twice. And each time he's, you know, intellectualizing it. Especially the second time when he goes back after, is it after the church is burned down?
I'm trying to remember. Tell me. Yeah.
Back. And they're walking in the rose garden and he's saying, well.
Yeah, it was after that, right.
Yeah, what is it about this man? Perhaps this, perhaps that. Brendan Gleeson's walking going, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not really the point.
He's saying, tell me who it was. And then Gleeson says, I don't know who it was. And he says, well, you told me you knew who it was. And I said, well, I don't know that this is the same person.
Yeah.
Well,
and I have to say, the director went to that place that I don't know about other cultures, but Americans hate the most, when the dog is killed.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, the minute I saw that church burning, I was like, oh, where's your dog? Where is your dog? And so how about your daughter?
That's something that was left ambiguous to me. Did you believe Chris O'Dowd at the end when he said he did not do that?
Yeah, I did. And
who do you think did it?
Well, the director says there's a little tell in the movie. What you see is somebody's got a bandaged hand.
Oh, now I need to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You do.
I'm not going to
tell you.
Don't tell me. Yep.
And the funny thing is I told my husband that, and he said, oh, I know who it was. I wondered why his hand was bandaged. And I went, wow, you are observant.
How about that?
I was just trying to hang on to what was going on at that point. But I was immediately thought, oh, there goes his dog. Oh, no. Because you hardly saw the dog. There was not a lot of reason for the dog. I mean, you know, it was his companion, and you love the dog, and he's got a nice little life.
Much,
all that kind of thing.
Right.
But it should. But that was the point too.
I love that. I love that. Got a reason to watch it again.
The namby pamby priest is talking about what was it that came up about the Zen Buddhist?
He said,
he goes, well, they can get angry too.
Yeah, because Father James got in a fight at the bar, and he was cleaning himself up. And the other priest comes in behind him and says, what happened? And he said, I think it was Brendan is the name of the guy. And he said, he's a Buddhist, you know, as if, you know, a Buddhist is going to be, you know, peaceful all the time or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's that's like the public perception. It's like you're a Buddhist. And he says, even Buddhists beat people up.
It's like, yeah, because what that means is you're completely denying human nature. Yeah, exactly. These are people. We are all flawed people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us more obviously than others, but all of us flawed in ways that affect us deeply.
Yeah.
And to deny that is to deny human nature in general. And so that's the thing that was, I was like, oh, that was such a brilliant touch.
It really was. Yeah. And it's like, why are you a priest?
Yeah. Well, and there's something else that I wanted to point out is that the reason that I thought was a core thing in this movie is at one point the father and daughter are talking. They're in somewhere pastoral looking. She's reading a book, H.P. Lovecraft, and he's painting. And I think this is where they say it. And they're talking about her suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I belong to myself, not to anyone else. And he says, true, false. And when there was that pause between true and false, I remember thinking, no, you don't just belong to yourself. And the false is, they're both true. I mean, they're both correct statements. Because what you're seeing just from watching the priest's week is the ripples that each person makes in all the people who they encounter every day.
Yeah.
Even if it's somebody who, you know, all you did was hold a door open for them.
Right.
That's a very small amount. But the people who you really interact with, it's the way that you go through your life as we're all bumping into each other that makes a huge difference one way or the other.
Yeah. And he's, someone who removes themselves is affecting a whole lot of people. They don't even understand.
Yeah. And you realize that's kind of why he had to go back to the town, because what would the lack of a good priest do to that town?
No, he tried to leave even, right? I mean, that was, gosh, this movie is just amazing everywhere we go. But yeah, he left, you know, after this fight, after he chewed out that other priest, off he goes.
Yeah.
And at the airport is this woman that he helped, the woman that was the positive in the whole thing. You know, her husband died. And yet she was, you know, I don't know.
She still had her faith,
right. Yeah, I guess that's the way to put it. I was wanting to say, you know, she was positive about it. But the thing is, she was realistic about it. She was like, this is all the stuff that we had.
Yeah.
And I love that what we had.
She said, it's not unfair. It's just what happened. And that, to my husband, was a key point in when he's on the stairs to the plane, I guess, and they're looking at the two baggage handlers who are callously leaning all over the lady's husband's coffin.
Yeah, and somehow that made him turn around.
Yeah, and he's realizing that
That's just it, how it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, that's just how it is. And also when she said to me, she said, he was talking about people would lose their faith, and she says, then it must not have been much of a faith to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If something like this happened and, you know, your husband dying and you lose their faith. And he says, for most people, faith is fear of death. And so it is easy to lose. And I think that was the point when so many things crystallized for him, including that, what are you really afraid of? And it's almost like that moment of the story about St. Peter leaving Rome, and he meets Christ going in with his cross, and he says, well, where are you going? And he says, well, somebody's going to be crucified. Then I've got to go. So he turns around. He's like, I've got to be, he's got to be there for the guy on the beach.
Yeah, that's really profound. So, I mean, he was saying that, you know, his fear of death was changing him too.
Well, to me, I think that's
great. I mean, but you're right. That's
not what the director said, but that's what I took out of his piece of art for me is he was looking at it. And yeah, everybody treats someone else's death callously. You treat your own as special. And that really, now that I think about it, that goes back to another thing, which is detachment.
Yeah, which is mentioned. That's right. The rich guy says that.
The beach.
Yeah. He says, you know, I feel a sense of detachment and it's leading to despair. You know, he doesn't say that specifically, but, you know, he does say he's detached and everything is becoming meaningless to him.
Oh, that's the rich man.
Right. But he used the word detached. The rich man did.
Yeah, definitely. But because that's interesting because I, at the time I was watching it, I noticed it. I didn't note it because then what happens is when they're on the beach and Chris O'Dowd is saying, oh, I wouldn't kill a dog. Oh, and then he stops and he says, did you cry? And he goes, oh, yeah, I cried. And he goes, and did you cry when you read about all those little boys who the priest had, you know, abused? And he says, oh, no, I didn't. And he says, I guess I felt detached. And that's when he gets shot.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, because I can't take this anymore. Because it's you're detached, but it was personal for Chris O'Dowd's character. It was very personal.
Wow. I'm trying to remember what the rich guy said, because Brendan Gleeson asked him, what do you think causes this detachment?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what his answer was. Another reason to watch it again.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think this is one of those that you can pull out periodically and watch. You're going to always get something more out of it. And I know that the director said he tries to put things in that you can get more than one viewing out of. For instance, when we see Chris O'Dowd's wife walking out of the water, she and the priest are having a conversation. And he said, well, you can read that two ways. When you're first seeing it, you don't know any more context than what they're talking about on the surface. Because he says the second time around, you can look at it as he knows this is the wife of the man who's threatened to kill him. Does she know? Can she help? Can she help stop it? That's kind of the way you could read those questions. So he deliberately is thinking on a lot of levels. And I have to say, the thing that impressed me most of all, first of all, I didn't know an interview could be so fun. I just loved talking to him. He was so engaging and interesting. And he and I clicked on a lot of levels, like about the H.P. Lovecraft book and why he put it
Which I really want you to talk more about, but go ahead and finish your point.
But the thing that impressed me most of all is, and I have this in the interview stuff that we can link to, is when I was talking about Brendan Gleeson, and I said at the very end, he is saying it's not too late to Chris O'Dowd. He's been shot, but he's not dead. And he's not saying it to save his own life. He's saying it to save the other man. He is loving him by giving him that chance and looking at him. And when I said that to the director, he said, yes, just like the thief on the cross. And I went, oh my gosh, Brendan Gleeson is also the thief on the cross. And so the director never forgot that. That was a continual running theme in his own mind for him to keep bringing things back to that. And I thought, and that's the part that I kept forgetting. It's put up there at the beginning, but we have to be reminded of it all the way through because we are always one of those two thieves on the cross. None of us is Christ, although Father James is a Christ figure, but he's still a thief on the cross.
Wow.
He's still a human being. And I was so impressed by the fact that that was the continual thread going through his mind. Because as he told in the broader Q&A, he was asked if he was Catholic. And he said, no, I'm not Catholic. And then there was this long pause and he kind of looks up like he's thinking a little. And he says, but you could say I'm Christian. And I felt like that cost him. He was saying that to a bunch of people who probably weren't really Christian. You know, he didn't have a reason to, he could have just popped that off, but I'm Christian. But he had to stop and commit to it. And I felt like that was just reinforced by him never forgetting the thieves on the cross.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. So, yeah, talk more about Lovecraft. I love that. So she was reading, his daughter was reading Lovecraft, and it was Witch House, I think? Dreams?
Yeah, Dream of the Witch House.
Dream of the Witch House, yeah.
And it was so funny because I don't really often look at things like that, except that, and I think this is afterwards, what that did is make me notice that the picture that the rich, no, maybe it was before. Anyway, the picture that the rich man takes off the wall and pisses on.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a memento mori picture, I believe.
Oh.
Which is one of those pictures where they would put a skull in or things like that to remind you that death is coming.
Okay.
So that had meaning in the same way. That had more meaning than we were looking for. And anyway, when she was reading, I was looking, for some reason, the book caught my eye, but you couldn't see the name of the book. And I went, wait, I know that picture. I know it. And it's of the, is it the succubus or incubus that's sitting on the woman's chest while she's dreaming? And it's called Nightmare. And she's lying there on the bed. And we can put a link to that picture. And I went, wait, I've seen this. I know this book. And so I spent so much time trying to see the name on the spine or somewhere which you could never see and think about that, that I missed almost everything that was being said in the whole scene. And I asked him who picked the book, and he got really excited and went, I did. Basically, he said, for one thing, they're both very intellectual. And I thought it was kind of interesting, actually, that he picked H.P. Lovecraft as something an intellectual would read, because that's not usually the way people go with H.P. Lovecraft. He said, but they're always reading books and making little clever references to each other. And so that's kind of just oddball enough. And then he also said the picture of, you know, the influencer of nightmares. And he felt like she was influencing emotions. And he felt like she was under the influence of her emotions so much. Now I'd have to reread what he said precisely, but that she was in kind of a waking nightmare.
Oh, wow.
And I said what it made me, that was the shift when I made to a morality play, because I suddenly thought about H.P. Lovecraft's stories and how there is no God in them, that we are all at the mercy of these eldritch elder gods that are kind of in another dimension that occasionally get caught into ours or come into ours and consume us, you know, with something that we can't even comprehend, but it's so nightmarish. And he said, yes, yes, it's like Brendan is Sigourney Weaver in Aliens. He's having to fight his way out because it's dark and there is no hope.
Yeah.
And so that just put a whole other dimension on what I saw.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was just really interesting.
I love that. You know, yeah, you never know if a director is just like, hey, she needs a book. Has anybody got a book? Or if there's actually, you know, thought going into that. It's so cool that there is.
Well, what,
I just love
yeah,
it.
Rose has told me before is if you see a picture or a book, the director probably picked it.
Yeah.
I mean, they might not
You'd
care.
Hope, yeah.
But if it seems to mean something, it almost always is because it means something to them for some reason. And they're dropping little hints.
Nice.
Yeah. And how about that scene at the end, which I thought was so pure? It's before he goes down to the beach and he's getting up and getting dressed, and then he prays and he's kneeling before the crucifix. And we're given a good look at that crucifix.
Yeah, it's extremely well done.
It's so moving.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, and he says, "Say your prayers, priest." I remember, and he says, "I already have." He was ready. Did. Yeah. And then that little boy, I remember you had a story about the little boy. I wanted to make sure you say, because that was fun. You know, not funny at the end, but the little boy shows up right at the end, and Chris O'Dowd is like, "Oh, he reminds me of myself."
Yeah, which was really ironic because he was exposing this boy to a kind of trauma, a horrible kind of trauma.
He was, yeah.
He was reenacting.
And it was like, I thought that maybe that would have turned him around. You know, I was hopeful because it was like, look at the relationship this priest has with that boy.
Mm-hmm.
And how positive it is. Mm-hmm. And that's how it should have been. And and yet, maybe it made him more angry. I don't know.
Well, it's because, not that something awful didn't happen. And in the beginning, Brendan Gleeson says, "Well, what about this? Have you done therapy? Have you, told the church you could get reparation? We could talk about it to the priest."
At the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, he rejects everything.
He's not saying any of that at the end, which is also an interesting thing. He's not pleading.
No.
Trying to give him a list of other options. Yeah.
Yeah, he's done that, and but he knows he's going on to this, and he's talking to his daughter on the phone, and he talks about the thing you said that's so strong about, we talk so much about sins, we don't talk enough about virtues, and the greatest one is forgiveness.
Yeah.
And think about when he goes to see that cannibal, who's played by his son, and he talks about, but God made me. Well, if anyone could love you, if God doesn't love you, I don't know who could or something.
Yeah, if God can't understand you, then no one can.
Yeah, that's it. And so it's all about, we're all seeking that forgiveness for the things that we know that are flawed that we've done anyway. And that's the thing that Chris O'Dowd's character can't embrace all along the way. It's been, whether rejected or nurtured, or he was just so wounded he just couldn't even see it, because we can't always, we can't blame him necessarily. We can blame him for what he does, because what he does is wrong and he's choosing to do something wrong. But it's his last words to his daughter that engender the hope for the future. She is able to, we think, probably offer forgiveness. And he, because of the way the priest acted, actually picks up the phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he sees her. Because the director said he almost had him not pick up the phone. I was like, oh, and he said, yeah, I couldn't do that. This movie was so dark. I had to give us hope. And I said, well, and I think that's how the priest lives on. He said, you're in my heart and I'm in yours. And that's how we live on, too, and do Christ's work when we're not here.
Yeah.
Oh, but the little boy.
Yeah, awesome. We need to end up on a high note here, because I love that little boy.
Who is just great, and he doesn't have a lot of a part in this, but he was in John Michael McDonagh's first movie, The Guard, and he was saying that, I think I watched the Q&A on that DVD because I was going to interview this director, and I'd never interviewed anybody, so I was super nervous, and Tom said, let's watch this and it'll give you some tips, and I went, okay. And somebody had asked about that little kid, because he has a part in that movie too, and he is just great and hilarious. And he said he showed up in a local cast call, and he had so much personality, and he was so sassy, basically, so self-assured, that they made that part for him, basically tailored more to him. And so then he said he could not have him in this. And then he goes, and I said, so he'll be in future movies? And he goes, oh, well, yeah, unless he's asking too much money. He seems to think he's he's worth a lot now.
He's the man now, yeah. Laughing. Oh, that's funny.
Well, and it's funny because the way that directors talk about actors is, he was joking the whole time. But when I was saying the thing about, I belong to myself and no one else, and true, false, and what the director had written was true, and Brendan Gleeson's thinking about it, and he says, well, it's some true, but it's mostly false. And he went to him and said, that's not what this guy would say, because that's not really true. And he goes, what? Okay, you're right. Let's put that in.
Yeah.
And he goes, but don't tell anyone, because actors get to write one line, and pretty soon they're telling everyone they co-wrote the movie.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun. Wow. Well, thanks for picking this movie. Man.
Oh, glad you liked it.
This may be one of my favorite movies.
Oh, yeah. I have to agree. It's in my desert island list.
Oh, cool.
It's for such a dark movie, the more you watch it, the more you see the hints of humanity in all those very desperate characters who are coming to him.
Yeah.
It's just so well written. So well done.
It's well acted. It's great. It's a gem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a gem.
I'm so glad you liked it.
I really did. I'm sitting here. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is it going to the pool room?
It is. It's in the pool room. It's already there.
Oh.
It's in the pool room on the shelf. I actually bought it. Yeah.
It's my own one. Well, is it available then? Because when I looked, I only saw it as a region 2.
Well,
I had to watch it streaming.
Yeah, it's available for rental at the rental place.
Oh, okay.
And then they just had a couple of them for sale, so I bought one. Yeah.
I'll look again. I was in a hurry.
Yeah.
Admittedly.
Cool. I'm just looking at, you mentioned that serial killer was Gleason's son, and I didn't know that. So I'm looking him up on IMDb. His name is Domhnall Gleason. Mm-hmm. Domhnall.
I don't know. Well, I know Brendan Gleeson is super into his Irish heritage, so it figures that his kids would have names that I don't know how to say because they're Celtic.
That's neat.
Gaelic. I'm sorry, Gaelic.
So good for him. He's doing great. It looks like he was in Unbroken.
He was, and he was superb in that. Excellent. He's really good. Yeah.
And he's going to be in Star Wars Episode 7.
I'm glad for him.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I'm glad for him. Let's see. I have high hopes for those Star Wars movies. I hope so.
I heard a podcast I was listening to by some people who have continually been changing podcast formats and names. Started off as Story Wonk. And it's a writer and her husband, who's, I guess he's also a writer. But they talk about story a lot, and they do a lot of talking about it with pop culture. And I just discovered they'd stopped the old one, which was too long for me to listen to, and started a new one called The Light Bulb. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about rebooting and restarting series, and Star Wars was one they were talking about with J.J. Abrams. And they said they kind of agreed with you. They felt like they didn't love what he did with rebooting Star Trek, but they felt like it was because he's more of a fantasy writer, and they thought, therefore, he'd do a much better job with Star Wars, which is essentially a fantasy.
Yeah. You're right, it is.
I thought that was an interesting
point. That is an interesting point. Yeah, I was hopeful because of the way Disney handled the Marvel stuff. Mm-hmm. I love that they said, all right, you guys go for it. And they don't seem to be out there telling them what to do or making it Disney-like. And it's its own thing. I mean, you know a Marvel movie now when you see it. I think that's awesome. And I think that, you know, Star Wars could end up being the same kind of thing if they let those guys rip. But yeah, J.J. Abrams, lots of lens flares, lots of action. I don't know. We'll see. I'm hopeful. I'm going to go see it. You know, it's I enjoy those movies. You know, what's funny is I was thinking about watching the Star Wars movies again, but I just... It was just like, there's really not a lot there. It's really cool looking, you know?
Yeah.
And the whole idea of the world and everything is really neat looking. And it's fun to watch, especially the first time, but I've probably seen them several times. But
the first three, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first six, you know, all of them.
I know them by heart. And it made me understand why, what was it that Harrison Ford said when they were, this was before they very unwisely, I guess, did the older Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
But they had said, would you play Han Solo again? He goes, well, there's not much there. He's pretty one dimensional. And I hadn't really thought about those characters in those terms. And I went, oh yeah, they're all very one dimensional. And he goes, and they said, so Indiana Jones, he goes, oh, in a heartbeat, obviously and sadly, but there you go.
Yeah, that's just it, isn't it? I mean, it's really the world and the idea of the world and how fun it is. Fun
and
place.
The perfect product of its times. And for what it is, it's good. Sometimes you want a movie like that.
Right.
School of Rock, Star Wars, you know.
Exactly.
A simple movie that makes you feel good.
That's right.
Well, and Domhnall Gleeson, if that's how you say it, wasn't he Ron Weasley?
He wasn't Ron. He was a Weasley. He was like one of the older Weasleys.
Okay, because I didn't think he looked right for it, but I knew I had the mm-hmm. Weasley name associated with him. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. So good for him.
Seasoned. Yeah.
Right.
And in fact, when I see him, he's kind of like his father now for me. When I see one of them mentioned in a movie, I perk up and take a closer look.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will watch a movie for one of them.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, and now for the McDonaghs.
Yes, the McDonaghs. So the McDonaghs, yeah. John Michael McDonagh's next movie, according to IMDb, it's called War on Everyone.
Yep.
So,
and is Brendan Gleeson a handicapped person or somebody who can't walk or something, I think?
Oh, he's in it?
Said.
Oh, how cool.
I think so. They said it's the Gleeson trilogy or something.
Oh, wow.
So you have The Guard, this, and he said my next one, he's very angry and... like he's in a wheelchair or something. Huh. I mean, he was just
This may not be it. I'm looking at Garrett Hudlund, Guy Pearce, and Michael Pena.
Oh, Guy Pearce.
Excuse me.
Another one of my, I'll watch something if he's in it.
Excellent.
He's so underappreciated.
Cool. Two corrupt cops in New Mexico set out to blackmail and frame every criminal unfortunate enough to cross their path.
Mm.
Things take a sinister turn, however, when they try to intimidate someone who is more dangerous than they are.
That's,
I like it.
Gosh, that sounds like the Martin McDonagh's second movie.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? That had like seven scoundrels in it or something, which I didn't see.
Yeah, psychopaths or something like that.
That was it. Seven psychopaths.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I didn't see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Guess it wasn't dark enough for me. I don't know.
Well, I will give it a watch.
Yeah, definitely, everybody, though, watch this. I guess if you've listened this long, there are not so many must have seen it. But also The Guard, I highly recommend. It's good.
You know what? I'm looking at The Guard, and I think I have seen it, and I did like it.
Oh, okay.
Oops. Sorry. I've got a cat freaking out on me here. Sorry.
Yeah, that's one where I remember we watched it and I kept going, why is there Western music, like from a Western in it? And mm-hmm. in the Q&A, he said, well, because this cop feels like he's in a spaghetti Western. He sees his whole life that way. And I went, wow, that puts such a different focus on it and it works.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
Okay, I'm going to tell you one last bit of trivia,
please.
Which I thought was great. Yeah. People were talking about the beautiful location.
Yes.
Calvary, which is gorgeous.
Right.
And he said, oh, well, The Guard I did in my dad's hometown. And my mother got mad. So I had to do this one in her hometown. I thought, I like that connection.
I do. I like
these tiny little Irish towns.
I like that idea. That's cool.
Yeah. Isn't that great? And I guess you don't see it that way when you grow up in one of these little places, but I just look at that and go, you mean people get to grow up with that kind of scenery? Here I was in Kansas and Missouri and now in Dallas, Texas, which has nothing, I'm telling you.
Oh, man.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Not that there isn't something great about the wind through a wheat field, but I'm just saying.
Oh, that's great. All right. Okay. So what have we got coming up now? We've got, our next one is Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore.
Something by Robin much Sloan. Lighter.
Yes. And then some more dismal, Broadchurch.
Something heavier again.
Yeah, but man, did I love that. I cannot wait.
It was very good.
Yes.
It was very good.
I can't wait to talk about it. Broadchurch. Yes, and I better get to picking a book.
I know
I need to get that done. I will do that this week.
Yep, that sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Okay, well, have a wonderful week, I guess, or a couple weeks.
Yeah, have a great couple weeks, everyone.
Yeah, and thanks for listening.
We'll be back soon.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.